I'm Piers Corbyn, and I'm from LetTheUKLive.com and StopNewNormal.net, and I was a candidate for mayor in the mayoral elections in London. And as a kind of extension of that, in a way, we've started this ULEZ, Can't Pay, Won't Pay campaign. Now, what that is about is that the mayor of London extended the so-called ultra-low emission zone to the North and South Circular Roads, making it 18 times bigger than the central area it was in before. And the consequence is 100,000 vehicles have now got to be taken off the road. And the cost of that is astronomical, and it means the ruination of small and medium businesses all over London.
Well, hang on, because 100,000 vehicles haven't got to be taken off the road. It's just that if they're driven within that area, then they do have to pay, I think it's a £15 charge. So, I mean, so if you're only using your car a couple of days a week, I think that's the aim of it, isn't it, to reduce car use?
Well, I think the aim of it is to destroy small businesses because, well, that will be the consequence because it's not just cars, it's anything that's not very new, including vans. So a lot of white van men will be, or white van mans or whatever, will be bankrupted because they can't afford new vehicles. And I think it's important to also understand it will not reduce pollution at all because people driving from outside London going through London will now go all around the North or South Circular Roads and increase their journey distance and make, therefore, more pollution.
So what happens to people who live within this zone? Are they exempt? Because have thought that they don't have to pay a charge simply for, because they are unfortunate enough to live in this area, or fortunate enough.
No, if you drive around in the area, you have to pay. I'm one of those people. I'm not in the inner zone at present, but I'm in the area where it will be extended, as will be huge numbers of people.
What's going to be the actual effect of this then over the next few months? How will people experience it? Living in there with vehicles or living near that area with vehicles, or maybe even visiting relatives or something.
That's right. Well, if you're living in the area and you drive around, you'll get sent a charge. If you come from outside the area into it, and there's a lot of people living just outside the North or South Circular having to visit people and hospitals inside, and they will have to pay. So what we're doing is we're going to drive around at will and refuse any fines. So you'll get sent these things, or the charges rather, which could turn into fines, I suppose. We'll just refuse to pay and send them back or bundle them all together and deliver them as bits of paper to Sadiq Khan.
What they're saying, of course, is Sadiq Khan and his friends, is that London has got far too many vehicles. I mean, some would say it has too many people, but then that's a population, and we're starting to get into a different debate there.
Yeah,
but it's certainly true that the houses that were built in London, say, the situation as it was in the 1950s and 60s, you've now got sometimes four times the number of people living in the same space. So there's just simply not enough room for all the cars. Sometimes, of course, if people are trying to park in London, they'll find it almost impossible. Well, so something has to be done to get rid of those cars, doesn't it?
Well, no, I don't think so. It's an attack on families and the people's rights and ability to move around. Interestingly, some boroughs actually have reduced their population density, Southwark being one of them, which is surprising when you see what is going up, but that's what the official figures show. But of course, Sadiq Khan's policies are for ramming skyscraper tower blocks for new people all over London. So, there's a complete contradiction.
It's almost as if you're in denial, Piers, because you're saying that there isn't overcrowding and congestion on London's roads. Anyone that goes to London knows there is, and that something's going. For example, in Singapore, they had a terrible problem with congestion. They just decided we're going to just have to tax cars back to a more sensible level. And effectively, that's what Sadiq Khan is doing.
Well, no. What he's doing is deliberately making it difficult for people to move around. You see, they've got these road narrowing schemes all over the place and road blockaging schemes in a lot of areas as well. So it's more difficult for anybody with a car to move around. And junctions are deliberately made narrow. They say in the name of coronavirus to, so people have to socially distance and all that nonsense. But that just impedes cars and buses.
Well, the thing is, there is alternatives, and surely that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get people out of their cars, onto their bikes, onto the buses and onto the trains. And surely that's a good thing.
Well, the amount of cars, private cars going around London is really small. There's a large number, if you look at any day, of delivery vans of various sorts from little businesses which will go bust. They have to improve roads instead of destroy roads. And recognise that they're lying, you see. They're saying this is to reduce pollution. It's not to reduce pollution, because it will increase pollution. It's a massive money spin. If you look at the, I think it was an AA or whatever, car users group pointed out that this is raising, or will raise, or if it does work, raise tens of millions every year.
So what do you think's really behind this? Can you just take a step back from it? What is going on?
Well, what is going on with transport in London and in every city, actually, is the councils, in the name of green spaces or green this or green that, are impeding traffic development or reducing cars everywhere and people's ability to travel, which is an anti-family thing. And this, of course, is part of Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030, where they envisage people not moving around much, living in tower blocks and so forth in cities. They also envisage reducing the amount of people living in the countryside. Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030 envisage reducing the numbers of people living in countryside and shoving them into tower blocks in cities. So maybe all these tower blocks in London that have been built, many of which are not full, certainly largely empty, though they are increasing the numbers of people living in London, maybe they have a longer plan to shove in more people.
But no, look, I grew up in South London in the 1960s and 70s, and certainly in the 60s, there were hardly any cars around. I mean, you know, you'd look up and down our street, you might see one or two cars, and that's where they're trying to get back to.
Well, I don't know, but the consequence is the ruination of small and medium businesses and the inability of families to move around. You see, families do need cars. I mean, if you want to go on a day trip or weekend to Brighton or Cornwall or something with the family, the cost in the trains is huge. I mean, if the policy involved reducing train fares, it might make sense, but it doesn't. I mean, it's not a good policy what they're doing.
We're also facing, well, we did face yesterday, without a vote in the Commons, a renewal of the Coronavirus Act for another 6 months without a vote. We had the death of one of the main supporters of the measures to try and limit the government's powers to lock us down. That's Sir David Amos, the Conservative MP, on Friday. And he would probably have been one of the main speakers this week in the House of Commons in that discussion, which then it took place without a vote. So what do you make of the renewal of the Act and the death of the MP?
Well, the renewal of the Act is an utter abomination, and it's a double abomination that they didn't even have a vote on it. So we can't see which MPs were really for it and who was against. It was when they asked for the they have to say ayes and noes, and only one MP said they wanted a vote. One MP, so that meant that there was insufficient to call a vote, so they didn't call a vote. And that is really pathetic. Now, they've done some little deals which involved not so much attacks on large gatherings and schools being closed. I don't know the details, but that seemed to have placated some MPs, so therefore they were happy not to press for a vote. That's what we understand happened. But I think it is an utter disgrace. This is the most important legal action against the population since the war. And there was no vote on it. I mean, that is a monstrosity. And really, symbolically, the government is saying to the population, look, just go to hell.
What about the death of the MP, though? Because he was a big supporter. I mean, I probably, wouldn't have attended your demonstrations, Piers, but he certainly was a vehement opponent of the lockdowns.
We formed United Actions with all these people on the simple United Front demands of no lockdowns, no coronavirus rules, and against this jabbing schemes. I didn't know him personally, but some of his colleagues, for example, had spoken in Parliament saying they'd never believed there'd be a day when they'd speak in Parliament in support of a Corbyn. And of course, he was speaking in support of me following one of my numerous arrests on the issue. No, it's a complete tragedy that Sir David Amos is dead. All sorts of people say all sorts of things about the curious timing of this, but I frankly don't know. The issue of security of MPs might be worth noting. I mean, but also people pointed out that it took an awful long time for the emergency services to turn up to him. You might look into why it took emergency services so long to come to his aid.
Yes, well, we've done that. Yeah. So also we've got the case of Julian Assange coming up again next week. So this is somebody who has revealed all sorts of war crimes, published them. He's really, I suppose, the one of the world's most famous investigative journalists and publishers. Yeah. And yet he's in a British jail in Belmarsh, high security prison, without actually having broken British law.
Yeah. No, it's an utter abomination. You see, that is just the government showing that they are supine grovellers to whatever the USA wants.
But this is the judiciary, surely, not the government.
Well, true. But the judiciary on matters of high state often just toe the government's line, as you've probably noticed. I mean, there are some independent judges around. That is true. That is true. But you see, what is the process involved in putting a judge in charge of a case? Now, that process is shrouded in mystery. And I would suggest on these sort of things, whoever is in charge of these things, make sure that the right sort of judge, from their point of view, is in charge.
I suppose both on the you can't pay, won't pay for the emission charge, and also on the Julian Assange. I just wondered if you are going to be campaigning on these two issues, particularly yourself, and if people are interested in supporting Assange and opposing the Sadiq Khan's new charge within the South Circular. What actions can people take, Piers?
Well, first of all, on Julian Assange, we let the UK live, fully support the Julian Assange campaign because he's a symbol of free speech, which is under attack by the coronavirus legislation, which is a cover for taking away our rights. And you can get in touch with the latest events just typing up Julian Assange, but also on our website, lettheuklive.com. Can't pay, won't pay. People join in. We have a Telegram group, ULEZ Can't Pay, Won't Pay. It's a public group. Anyone can join. Just join in, find out what. And on the day, on the 25th of October, we'll have some convoys of cars driving around. We'll have stickers in cars saying, ULEZ Can't Pay, Won't Pay. And we will not pay any of the
charges. So one of the things people can obviously do is put a sticker on their bumper or whatever. This is the traditional US way of doing things, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we can do that in London too. Hey, if people want a sticker, how do they get hold of one?
They just get one. Go to that Telegram group I mentioned, ULEZ Can't Pay, Won't Pay. Just type in ULEZ and it will turn up, actually. Or come to lettheuklive.com and you'll be able to download them or come along to our events and we'll give them out. We're having thousands printed as we speak.
Okay, Piers, maybe you could just round up by giving us a couple of websites or wherever you are online, and also any physical events that people can actually come along to.
Well, a physical event for the ULEZ Can't Pay, Won't Pay will be this Monday when they officially open or start this monstrosity. And it could turn into a new London poll tax resistance. I'm completely serious because all these cars, people having these jumped up charges onto them is a monstrosity. So that is one event. There are many other events going on.
Whereabouts?
We'll probably meet at Elephant and Castle, but we'll advertise that on our website, and it's likely we'll drive to Thamesmead, where during the election, almost everybody on Thamesmead Estate, which is along the River Thames in South London, as you probably know, were totally against the ULEZ extension because that was mooted by Khan during the election, and a lot of them voted for me as a consequence. In that election, I got 55,000 first or second preferences. So that means 55,000 different people voted for me. So, you know, there's a lot of people around who understand the issues. And, you know, the ULEZ issue was one of the biggest things that people supported us about.
Okay, so that sounds like a bit of a convoy going from Elephant and Castle up to Thamesmead on Monday. Yeah. What time?
I expect we'll leave about 12. But I'm not completely certain of those times yet. We've got to agree with people who are bringing cars from West London, maybe. But that's very likely. And again, go to lettheuklive.com for details. But for information today, I'm being in Parliament Square. We're going to march from Parliament Square to Bill Gates' headquarters to take down Bill Gates. We want to close his headquarters by surrounding it, which is quite easily done.
Well, that's another point, isn't it? Actually, Gates was in London. What's he doing over here at the moment? I noticed just at the time of this renewal of the Coronavirus Act.
Exactly. Well, that's there. He's there. On behalf of the mega corporations of the world, the big pharmaceutical industries, to make sure the government complies. And they've got one is the monstrosity of big pharmaceutical and the jabbing of children, which is going to result in injuries and deaths of many. And Bill Gates is also talking more about the climate nonsense. He's decided to write a little book on climate, another subject on which he knows nothing, but that is there to propagate the fake religion of man-made climate change, which of course is the underlying justification for almost everything they do.
I've noticed also that Bill Gates is buying up a fantastic amount of farmland, and he's also got this Svalbard seed vault in Greenland, I think it is, or Iceland, where he's trying to keep copies of all the world's seas, a bit like a kind of version of Noah's Ark or something.
Yeah, well, it's all evil for control, you see, because they want genetically modified crops and they want genetically modified humans. I know it's difficult to grasp this, but that is what they want. That is what the technocracy theory being put into practice is about. That's what
and it's interesting that Bill Gates has got his London HQ. Whereabouts is it?
It's up Victoria Street. It's number 62 Buckingham Gate. So it's on the right as you go up Victoria Street. Not very far up there. Number one is a government building doing climate nonsense. And then about, I don't know, a few blocks further up, there's Bill Gates on the right at that junction.
And so what entity is it? Is it the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation there?
It's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation European office is there.
Okay. Piers, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.